Hey, welcome back. Hey, check this out. Morgue workers thought they had encountered a zombie when they pulled a lady out of a refrigerator to find that she was still breathing. Back on June the 24th, a woman was traveling with friends in a car when their vehicle had a head-on collision with another car. And while the other passengers escaped without major injury, paramedics believed the unnamed lady was dead. They checked for signs of life, including breathing and a pulse, but there was nothing, apparently, so they took her to the nearest morgue in Carletonville, South Africa. However, when technicians returned to the room later on, they were horrified to hear breathing coming from one of the refrigerators. When they opened the drawer, they discovered the woman was still alive, and she remains in critical condition. However, one of the mortuary workers told local media, "You never expect to open a morgue fridge and find someone in there alive. Can you imagine if they'd begun the autopsy and killed her?" This person said. Garrett Bradnick, operational manager for Distress Alert, said, "Our crew is devastated. We are here to keep people alive," quote, end quote. You can read more about that in the news section, where our webmaster tonight, Sean Latasor, has posted that story up at coasttocoastam.com. Hey, George Norrie is coming back to Asheville, and he's better than ever. Join George and company on Saturday, August the 25th, as he returns to the beautiful Diana Wortham Theater for an amazing show with special guests, the Rocket Man, David Adair, and ufologist Micah Hanks, discussing Area 51. William Fortune, author of The Final Days and One Year After, speaking about solar attacks on our planet and our grid. Asheville's own paranormal investigator, Joshua P. Warren, and spiritual teacher and psychic medium Vincent Jenna, plus a live band, audience participation, and a meet and greet to follow. For tickets, call 828-257-4530, 828-257-4530, or go to dwtheatre.com, dwtheatre.com. Click the Buy Tickets button and off you go. All right. Back to more of my conversation with Jay Dyer, Esoteric Hollywood. I may have to hire someone to start my car tomorrow morning. Back with more on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Jay Dyer is with us. The book is Esoteric Hollywood, and Esoteric Hollywood 2 is coming to a bookstore near you very soon. And just a reminder, coming up at the top of the next hour, we'll talk with Steve Asher, former Kentucky State Penitentiary guard, and we'll talk about haunted Kentucky. Right now, back to Esoteric Hollywood. We were talking about drugs, LSD, for example, in Hollywood, and you were talking about Cary Grant, who was, I suppose you could call him, an early adapter. And, I mean, this is before the Grateful Dead and even the Merry Pranksters and the Kool-Aid, the acid tests, wasn't it?
It is. It's prior to the Laurel Canyon scene, if you've read Dave McGowan's works. And this is in the 50s. So what is fascinating is that, as I was saying, the jet set of Hollywood, you know, they were hanging out with a lot of the British elites. They were hanging out with Aldous Huxley, and of course Huxley had been dosing himself, you know, far prior to what we know of as the CIA's MKUltra experiments in the 50s, and had been writing about it. And it's Cary Grant who is one of the pioneers of tripping before Tim Leary, which or right around the same time, I think, as Tim Leary was first experiencing, if I recall. But yeah, and I think that speaks to another layer of this that most people don't understand, which is not just connection between, say, the CIA and Hollywood, but the connection between really powerful oligarchs and families and Hollywood. And this is something I've covered in the book in many chapters. For example, the connections between Greek billionaires and Ian Fleming, the creator of the James Bond story. And this actually plays into some of the Bond stories. You know, Fleming writes Bond as this character who is hobnobbing with some of the world's most powerful, wealthy men. And that is, of course, Fleming himself. And Fleming was friends with Aristotle Onassis. In fact, Aristotle Onassis even put up money. He offered to pay for the first Bond film to be made, Dr. No, don't think he ended up doing it, but that just shows that that's what we're talking about here is the same people hanging out with Garcon and Onassis, the same people making movies, the same people creating James Bond, the same people hanging out with Cary Grant doing LSD. I mean, it's a very small world, I guess you could say, at the top.
But again, here's another paradox. We have Hollywood being used. I mean, you and I talked about this on my podcast, The Rock and Roll Twilight Zone. We talked about the Beatles and the British invasion being used to introduce drugs to American culture, the dumbing down of American culture, distraction, the Kennedy assassination, the ramping up of the war in Vietnam. So we have Hollywood promoting drugs, but then at the same time, we have movies coming out like Reefer Madness. I mean, I know that predates, that's a much older movie, but why, we're getting mixed messages here.
That's a good question. The mixed messages come, in my view, because of different phases. So not everything can be done right away. In other words, it takes time. You kind of have to marinate people in where you want to take them and it slowly introduce stuff. And in fact, I think this is where predictive programming comes into play. You introduce things ahead of time, maybe for what you have planned 15, 20 years down the road. And that's really one of the key tools of conditioning through film is to warm people up in the sense that, you know, something like Minority Report, which I covered in the book, we see the intense level of surveillance. We see the smart technology everywhere. And this came out, you know, right around the turn of the millennium, right around 2000, 2001. And we're now seeing, you know, 18 years later, the implementation of a lot of the technology that Spielberg had in Minority Report, which, of course, I recognize as, you know, Philip K. Dick's story. But it's actually because Philip K. Dick was hanging out with people in the Silicon Valley circles that he knew what was to come 10, 20, 30, 40 years into the future. And I think Spielberg is intentionally doing the same thing in his adaptation, showing us what's to come so that we're a lot more ready to accept these things. We don't make too much of a fuss, you know, when we learn that, oh, Facebook and, you know, all these apps, everything is watching everything that we do. The ads are tailored to us. There's a scene in Minority Report where, you know, Tom Cruise is walking past advertisements and they call his name out. You know, they already know what he's into, what he wants, what he likes. That's, in fact, what the CEO, a couple of the engineers from Facebook, if you saw what they said when they came out talking about what they were a part of and how they feel bad that they were part of this social engineering experiment at Facebook in terms of conditioning everyone through collecting all their data and targeting them with advertisements and targeting their feed to change their opinions on things, to nudge them. And that's actually what was in Minority Report.
Well, it's one thing for Philip K. Dick to have, you know, dealings with, you know, some insider in Silicon Valley, or maybe a director happens to know someone in the R&D department at Sony, so he gets a heads up on some cool technology. He works that into his movie. But, you know, since we're talking about predictive programming, how do you explain then that you know, that spinoff? This is sort of the prime example in my mind. The spinoff from the X-Files, which was The Lone Gunman, and that episode where they had, this is prior to 9/11, they had in the episode planes flying into buildings, hijacked planes flying into buildings. How does that happen, Jay?
That's because Alex Jones has had Dean Haglund on his show, folks, and Dean Haglund has told Alex Jones that the CIA was on the set.
There we go, another patented Jay impression. Well done, sir. Alex is in the room suddenly.
Oh, actually, yeah. So Dean Haglund from the X-Files, one of the stars of The Lone Gunman, which would later become the spinoff. You know, Dean Haglund says that the CIA was on the set at times. They would come and they would say, "We would like you to have this in the script. We'd like this. We don't really like that idea." So there was consultation at some level. I don't know for certain if that had anything to do necessarily with the Lone Gunman pilot, but I wouldn't be surprised. And in fact, as I was mentioning earlier, I just finished Annie Jacobson's 500-page history of DARPA. And amazingly, in the last chapter of that book, Pentagon's Brain, she says that she, with Chris Carter and with Gail Ann Hurd, who's the co-producer of Terminator with James Cameron, that they all took a trip to the Pentagon. And this was a kind of consulting slash research trip to find out what DARPA's latest technologies were. So I'm not making too much out of that, but just she reports that as a fact. This is not a conspiracy book. It's a Pulitzer-nominated history of DARPA. And what that tells us is that, yes, there's the, you know, that there is this collusion between even the Pentagon and somebody like Chris Carter. Now, I'm not saying Chris Carter's a bad guy. I'm just saying that you know, if you're invited to the Pentagon, you want to hear what DARPA's up to. If you're a creator of science fiction shows, you're probably going to do that. So I'm just saying that that's very real. It does go on, and journalists have documented it.
All right, let's go to the phones. On the wildcard line, Gary's in Santa Maria, California. Gary, good evening. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Oh, this is a real important one. There's an entity out there called Q that a huge percentage of your Coast audience will be familiar with, and it's probably the king of all conspiracy theories. But he talked about the movie White Squall. If you want to unwrap Hollywood's connection to the CIA, look up Alan Purwin, P-U-R-W-I-N, on Wikipedia. He was the pilot that was killed making American Made with Tom Cruise. If you go to the bottom of the Wikipedia page, it has quotes from Ben Stiller, who was on Zoolander, Trump's movie, and Gary Gray, the producer of White Squall. Now, if you're CIA, there's not a better operative to have than a pilot or a helicopter pilot, and also the casting directors of the movies. If you start cross-referencing, which is easy to do on IMDb, follow everybody from the CIA advisors, Alan Purwin is the key. I don't believe that was an accident. I believe he knew way too much, and everything is laid out right on Wikipedia under Alan Purwin and what Gary Gray and Ben Stiller said. Watch the casting directors. They're the ones that pull in everybody on all of these movies and direct the shots. So the CIA is embedded with the casting agents. Of course they would be. They're the ones that pick and choose who goes in the movies. And for all of you people that follow Q, this is the key. The movie White Squall, American Made, Alan Purwin was in over 100 movies. He knew where all the skeletons were buried. He was also in the movie Trapped. This is very important. Trapped lost somebody on set, and Courtney Love was also in that movie. It's all right there. All you have to do is keep clicking through the IMDb databases, and it'll all be revealed. Every movie that Q has mentioned, Alan Purwin was in. That is not a coincidence.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Gary. That was a Ridley Scott movie, if I'm not mistaken. That's going back about 22 years. Jeff Bridges, I think, was in that. But I know we have to be careful, I think, about citing Wikipedia as a source revealing a conspiracy when, I mean, I was at a UFO conference recently, and everyone kept coming up to me and saying, Wikipedia is NSA. It's controlled by the NSA. So I'm not sure who to believe here. Anyway, Jay, what do you know about White Squall? Have you heard this theory before?
I have not. This is all new to me. But you can find some pretty interesting things on IMDb. Not that that's necessarily a conspiracy, but you can find, for example, that Dodi Fayed has produced movies, which I didn't know. You can find that Fidel Castro has some acting credits when he was a younger man in L.A., which most people don't know. So there are all kinds of gems that you can dig up on IMDb.
All right. Well, speaking of Fidel Castro, I don't know if you've heard the latest, but some people are claiming that our Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, actually is the son of Fidel Castro.
I have heard that.
Well, I have to say, I've seen, I've seen photos of a very young Fidel and Justin Trudeau. Well, who knows? I don't know. Anyway, let's go to the wild card line. George is in Corpus Christi, Texas. George, good evening. Welcome to Coast.
Well, yes, thank you so much, Mr. Sarah. Just two quick questions, quick comment. Like these stars that are these Hollywood people that unravel, like Britney Spears and. She kind of unraveled, shaved her hair, kind of a weird thing. And also Kanye West going to Trump after he got elected. It's kind of weird. And my question is, was Roseanne Barr a victim of her own words? I mean, she talked about mind control. You all mentioned it. And she has been on drugs. Yeah, but a lot of people are. And then all these connected to all the things that are going on right now, like all these shootings, most of them are psycho drug people. I don't know. And I'll take my answers off the phone.
All right. I thought that was kind of interesting. George made the comparison, to Britney Spears shaving her head, going off the rails, and then Kanye West supporting a political candidate. I don't know that there's any correlation there. However, the Britney Spears example is interesting. And I think you and I have talked about this before, Jay, how it's almost like certain people trying to break free of this mind control, and then they are being brought back sort of under control.
Yeah, and the odd thing about Britney was that around that same time, she did have a military, I think he was a special ops guy, who was her boyfriend, and he ended up dying, according to the Daily Mail. I don't know that that necessarily proves anything, but there does seem to be a pattern of people who, around age 30, who are the big pop stars, they do try to break free from this lifestyle, some to some success, and some don't have much success. So it could be that what we saw with Kanye was a kind of breaking free and, maybe being a little more red pill. He was tweeting out famous documentaries like Century of the Self by Adam Curtis, which is a pretty red pill, wake you up kind of documentary. So I was happy to see Kanye doing that kind of stuff. And to me, that would suggest that, maybe he really is. I certainly hope so. Really is waking up.
All of the flashing of, the Illuminati signs and so forth. Is that just clever marketing, or is there something deeper going on there?
It can be both. In fact, I would say that now it is going to become a marketing meme. But if you look into symbology, if you look into the occult, for example, if you think about yoga, I'm not a practitioner of yoga, but I'm just saying that the purpose of yoga is to put the body into certain archetypal god forms in the tradition of yoga, right, to sort of evoke that deity or that god form. And so the same idea in magic or in the occult or in alchemy or symbology, you create certain forms or symbols even with the hand to signify something to other people in your group, in your cult, or to signify to people's subconscious. So, Jay-Z making a pyramid and sticking his eye through it, he's definitely consciously doing that because he is quite openly a fan of Crowley, a fan of the occult. And presumably Beyonce as well. So it can be both marketing and there's no discontinuity between marketing and something that's occultic per se.
Got it. Jay, listen, we'll come back. We'll talk about Anthony Bourdain's tragic suicide on the other side. Clarence Carter snatching it back here on Coast to Coast AM. All the songs, all the bumper music you hear, this is stuff that I have on my iPhone. This is my... the soundtrack of my life. My 11-year-old twin boys, sometimes they get on my phone and they go through my playlist and they go, Dad, don't you listen to anything from the 21st century? And Jay Dyer is the impressionist, but I usually go into my Nixon and say, well, if it's square, it's because I like it that way. Anyway, we will get back to Jay Dyer in just a moment, and he can do a proper Richard Nixon, I'm sure. A city in West Virginia is on the edge following sightings of a strangely dressed individual lurking on the side of a road and wielding a machete. South Charleston resident Jeremy Caldwell was driving with his brother last weekend when the duo passed by the mysterious stranger and were positively bewildered by what they had seen. It was like he was out of a movie, he told a local TV station. He has a green jumpsuit on, a machete, white tennis shoes, a mask, a chain around his neck, and a black hat. Understandably concerned about the machete man, he promptly reported the sighting to police, but the individual was gone by the time the authorities arrived. Remarkably, this was actually Caldwell's fourth sighting of the stranger, who he says seems to wander around a specific spot on a road in South Charleston. Fortunately, this time around, he was able to capture footage from the encounter and posted it on Facebook in the hopes that someone would have some or someone might have some answers about the machete man. You can check out the video for yourself and read the entire story up at the highlights carousel at coasttocoastam.com, where our webmaster tonight, Sean Loudersore, has posted that. Back to my conversation with Jay Dyer. Author of Esoteric Hollywood will delve into the Anthony Bourdain suicide and your phone calls coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. Jay Dyer, author of Esoteric Hollywood, stays with us. The website, jaysanalysis.com. Anthony Bourdain's tragic death last month in sort of a rustic area of France. And, you know, I'm always very hesitant to talk about a suicide and question whether it may have been a murder in lieu of, you know, any significant evidence. I haven't seen any. However, you know, it's funny. I always, and the reason I say that is because, you know, obviously he had issues with depression, and there are a lot of people out there that are suffering unimaginably with depression. And so I certainly don't want to, you know, if his suicide stands as kind of a warning and can serve as some sort of a you know, consciousness raising you know, for people with depression, I don't want to diminish that. However, that being said, you know, there are a lot of questions around his suicide, and I wanted to get you to weigh in on that. Have you heard anything, Jay, that leads you to believe it may not have been a suicide?
Nothing substantial, mainly just circumstantial type patterns and questions that have arisen in similar cases like this. Maybe Michael Hutchins from NXS, or maybe Chris Cornell or David Carradine, Hunter S. Thompson. I mean, I think there's a lot of legitimate questions in those supposed suicides, maybe River Phoenix as well, if we count overdoses. I think the Kurt Cobain is definitely one that we can question. And definitely, I know that Bourdain was not involved in any sort of autoerotic asphyxiation, but when there is maybe a hit or an intelligence agency involved in something like that, that is at times a cover for the murder, giving the impression that the person, you know, was involved in something that basically makes their name, muddies their name, and it's an easy way to cover a hit. So do I know? I have no real clear evidence, but I do think that he was saying some interesting things on Twitter politically. You know, he had a very large following. He was dating Asia Argento, and her father, of course, is a famous horror director. There was a lot of very bizarre things on Anthony Bourdain's Twitter, bizarre, gory artwork and so forth. But again, that's all circumstantial. I can't really say anything either way, but it is worth worth considering.
Well, and you mentioned Asia Argento. She also alleges having been assaulted by Harvey Weinstein. Not that there's necessarily any connection there. However, you know, it's interesting. I think it was at the Cannes Film Festival. Argento was in attendance. I don't know if Bourdain was with her at the time. I think he was. She called Hollywood out. I mean, she raked Hollywood over the coals. So the timing of that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, she did. And it's definitely worth considering. But, you know, this kind of stuff, there's no way to really prove it either way. But I do think that when you're dealing with people at this level, and when people are calling people out in a very vocal way, it could be very dangerous. you know, I think that when we look at previous people who did have similar deaths of that nature, you know, River Phoenix was, for example, supposedly on the verge of giving interviews about the Family of God cult, which he was raised in, which, you know, we know is a, was a pedophile cult. And, of course, River Phoenix ends up supposedly overdosing. So, you know, Hunter S. Thompson talked about 9/11 being an inside job. Of course, he ends up dying. So it does seem to follow on the trail. When these kinds of things happen, it does tend to happen after they have called out somebody pretty powerful.
Someone mentioned Chris Cornell earlier. I believe Cornell and also the lead singer of Linkin Park were both in, very interested in and researching pedophilia rings as well. So maybe there's a connection there as well. I don't know.
I've heard that, but yeah, it's hard to say. You know, there's a lot of questions that can be asked about the Kurt Cobain case. I work with people who've done interviews with the investigator on the Kurt Cobain case, and of course he has had a lot of questions over the years. But yeah, it's hard to say.
Let's say hi to Joseph on the wildcard line in Monterey, California. Good morning, good evening, Joseph.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I'm a healer. I do a lot of different types of healing work, and I come across a lot of different cases, and there's a lot of different conditions. I've had a lot of experience in some areas. In the area of mind control, some people use the word thought reform, which is more descriptive, and it's a more subtle form of mind control and conditioning. The MK Ultra program is called Monarch. Those are the people that they open their subconscious wall and to program them, and sometimes they become possessed. This is demonic possession. But there is another type of a possession called extraterrestrial possession. If you could see it as a demonic possession as using human beings as hand puppets and ETs using human beings as like marionettes. Okay. So what I'm leading to is do you ever have, like you said before, there were unusual experiences that you may feel that you were talking, but you really don't know. But there's a more subtle form of psychic attack against people. And if you're blowing the whistle like you are, and you have a lot of courage, I want to thank you for it. And I'm sure there's millions of people out there that understand what you're doing on a more esoteric level, and you are dealing with the esoteric directly, and they appreciate that you're coming forward. You have a lot of courage. So thank you for that. And, of course, coast to coast as well. Do you ever have any kind of unexplainable situations for no reason certain things happen, like, or people, like, for some reason they turn away from you and there's no reason for them to do it? It may be a form of psychic attack. Also, do you ever hear or you ever feel anything, any unusual pains or any unusual conditions that may be happening to you that you know this is unusual, doesn't usually happen? And I don't want to get too much into your personal life, that's yours, but do you ever need to call on help, like angelic help? Because you can if you're under psychic attack.
All right, Joseph, let's get Jay in here to respond. Jay, are you a candidate for psychic attacks?
Well, I suppose that's possible. I do believe in the reality of the spiritual realm. But I don't really fixate too much on worrying about that kind of stuff, mainly just because, you know, I don't want to be superstitious. I'm not saying that you're superstitious. I'm just saying that I don't really, you know, worry too much about whether someone turning away or some event happening was you know, organized by some government agent or something like that. I think that would be a little much. But, you know, I do certainly believe in the reality of the spiritual warfare.
All right, Joseph, thank you for that. Let's go to a lot of wild card line calls tonight. Dave is in New Jersey. Dave, good evening, good morning.
Richard, I can't do that for you right now. Joking.
You can't do what for me right now? I'm sorry, you can't do what for me right now?
I can't talk to you.
You can't talk to me. All right.
I'm teasing. No, I wanted to bring up 2 points. One of which is that in Poltergeist, there was a scene where Joe Beth Williams and Craig T. Nelson were swimming in a pool that they were building, but they were using real skeletons. And a lot of freaky stuff happened on set.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anybody knew that.
Are you thinking of Coach?
Craig T. Nelson. Yeah, what happened to him? What happened to him on the set, Jay?
Well, they were swimming in a pool that wasn't completed, and they used real skeletons.
Is that true, Jay? Did they use real skeletons in that scene?
Yeah.
I have read that supposedly they did. I mean, I don't know if that's substantiated, but that's been the rumor. And, of course, you know, the death of the little girl, I think, after or during the filming of the sequel. But, yeah, I mean, who knows? I wouldn't be surprised. I know that they did bring, you know, an actual psychic onto the set to consult. Spielberg wanted that to happen. So, you know, they at least believe that there was some real spiritual stuff going on during the filming of that movie. I was just joking about the Coach reference. I was kidding. But
okay.
I was saying maybe they brought skeletons onto the set of Coach.
Got it. All right. Hopefully you weren't talking about Jerry Van Dyke. that's dark and uncalled for. Dave, thank you for that. Well, east of the Rockies, William is in Reading. Is it Reading, Missouri or Reading, Mississippi, William?
Massachusetts.
I'm sorry, Massachusetts. Reading, of course. Welcome.
Welcome. I want to talk about Rosemary's Baby. The director of that film, that seemed to have a lot of put into a lot of what you're talking about. That there's, you know, the people at a time that in the film are dealing with the occult, and of course there's Mia Farrow was in that movie. Of course, you know, she has a whole history of her own, and Polanski was the director. He was going with Sharon Tate, and the way I look at that film, I tend to look at these things pretty deeply, that he was exposing a lot of things like Kubrick did in Wide Shut. And when the Manson Matters went down, it was possible, and I'd like to know if Jay knows, I'm sure he studied this, they might have been, the murder might have been meant for him, because you had in that film Charles Grodin. You know, he was like the doctor, and of course, Cassavetes was a husband. He was an actor. So they're showing, you know, basically the hipsters of the time, the people of the 60s who were emerging. You know, she was, Mia Farrow could have been, you know, like a thousand girls out in California. Oh, he was based in New York, but, you know, hippie, you know, girls. You portrayed, she was like, you know, like could have been like anybody. Right. I wanted to get Jay's thought on that. And since this is Coast to Coast, you talk about this. Before I leave, I just want to, you talked about the Mandela effect, and there's a terrific story with the Thai soccer team.
Okay.
Yeah. Because as you know, the story was that, you know, obviously the kids were in the cave. I remember hearing. And I think I'm pretty sure I did hear this. That I heard on maybe on the radio, but perhaps on TV, that the kids, I had heard from some news report that somehow the kids got out of the cave, or were rescued and got out of the cave, but the coach and maybe one or two adults or supervisors were still in there. And that I've been. I might have heard this maybe a couple of weeks ago, I thought I did. And then when they came back to the story, you know, they go back to different things, you know, Trump and everything. And it was just, you know, the kids were out. Now, I just heard that on ABC, they just did a late night thing where they're, you know, looking for the kids. And I just maybe was imagining, I don't think so. I know you're not talking about this, but if, I don't know, maybe that your listeners or maybe even you might have heard it.
I haven't heard that about that original report, but, you know, within the last hour, they have divers have started a mission to free the boys. And I was following with interest last night on Twitter. Elon Musk was tweeting back and forth with another individual about how best to free them, because Elon has this tunneling company. It's a construction company that specializes in tunnels. So it was very interesting to see him weighing in on how best to free this. It's a fascinating story. Well, first of all, Jay, is there anything in there that you want to talk about Rosemary's Baby at all?
Well, actually, the TV show that Jay Wiedner and I did at Gaia TV, which you can still watch, it was 19 episodes. We did an episode on Rosemary's Baby. I can't remember if that actually made it into the series or not, but the Jay had an interesting theory that was very similar to the caller's, saying that perhaps Roman Polanski is represented by the Cassavetes character in the film. So that's entirely possible, and you're not the first person to have that theory. And certainly Polanski would know, being in those circles and, of course, having to flee the U.S., you know, based on his conviction. So it's entirely possible.
And, of course, then you have the cameo role there of Anton LaVey playing the devil himself in the Dakota, where that was supposedly the setting, the Dakota building, this magnificent Gothic structure, where of course John Lennon died, and where he fell after being shot multiple times by Mark David Chapman, is the almost the exact same spot where there's a scene in the movie, a woman who's a friend of Mia Farrow's character gets thrown out the window. She lands in that courtyard, almost in that same place. Kind of almost like a ritual sacrifice.
Yeah.
Am I reading too much into this, Jay?
No, absolutely. In the film, it's a ritual sacrifice. And, there's significant evidence to suggest that Mark David Chapman may have been under my control.
There you go. And also, I think reported seeing Mia Farrow walk by the building earlier in the day.
Interesting.
I have to stop reading you, Jay. You're making me connect too many dots. It's going to keep me up at night. So again, Esoteric Hollywood, Part 2. When can we expect that in bookstores?
I should be done with it in the next few weeks, and then I would guess a month or two after that, Chris will have it out. But of course, if you want to get the first book, it's still available. Ask people to get the signed copies directly from me. There's a tab at Jay's Analysis. You can get them, and I'll mark them up however you want, whatever kind of signature you want. I'll draw you a My Little Pony or whatever you want.
Jay'sAnalysis.com. Jay, always a real delight to speak with you. You're just a font of knowledge, and I always look forward to our conversations. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. It was a blast.
When we come back, Haunted Kentucky with a former Kentucky State Penitentiary guard, Steve Asher, when Coast to Coast continues right after this.